There was so much anxiety, you know, psychologically, there was so much trauma that if I just could have relaxed a little bit before and just believed that it is something that you can get through, it would have, I think, helped a lot.
When you're weak, I'll be strong. When you let go, I'll hold on. And when you need to cry,
you can't get upset about little things anymore.
This needs to get out of my way because I have something to do.
You're scared to death, like you can't take.
Live your life and have fun.
Together we can do it. I'm gonna love you through it.
There's always new things, which I learned a lot about new therapies coming out too, and it's always good to be informed.
Stories of surviving and thriving, plus interviews and inspiration. This is Breast Cancer 2013 with Dean Richards on 720 WGN.
And our guest, Dr. Catherine Pesch, North Shore University Health System. Dr. Mark Sisko, also with North Shore University Health System. We'll meet some of our survivors on the program today and talk about an amazing resource for women, men and women who are dealing with breast cancer. And you on the phones at 312-981-7200. Texting your questions in at 24720. Let's go to the phones and get to some of you hanging on. And we'll start off with Mary on WGN. Hi, Mary.
Hi, how you doing, Dean?
Very well.
Good. Hello, doctors. My question is this. I have heard that there are certain types of machines for dense breasts. Do you recommend that?
Well, there's actually multiple different types of breast imaging that exist. The first is mammogram, and there has been strides in the types of mammograms that we use now. The most technologically advanced to date is something called digital mammography. So, and that means instead of what they used back in the day, where they were films that they placed on that the radiologist had to place up in order to read them, now it's all on the computer. That's the best type of mammogram that you can get currently. There is another type of mammogram that they're working on
with
making.
With the digital mammography, you're able to sort of manipulate, instead of just looking at a piece of film, you're able to manipulate, zoom in.
Exactly.
Really,
and
kind of,
on the computer, they can zoom in and out the type of contrast, meaning they can make things light up and then darken to help them read it, which is the best way possible.
Is there a preferred method for a woman with dense breast tissue?
So it's a very controversial topic, actually, the idea of breast density. And really what that's getting at is when a woman has very dense breasts, which is more common in younger women, our breasts become less dense as we age. So in women who are very young in their 30s and 40s, early 40s, it's difficult to read on mammograms when a woman does have dense breasts. And so sometimes we will do additional imaging if we are concerned about a suspicious area with other types of imaging modalities other than a mammogram.
Does that answer your question,
Doctor,
Mary?
Excuse me.
Go ahead.
Yes. You think, doctor, that a patient should ask their doctor if the techs are using the digital machines? Or do you think they're all using them now?
It has become much more standardized. I think it's totally appropriate for a patient to ask to make sure that it is a place that's giving digital mammograms. I think that would be wonderful.
Oh, thank you so much.
Sure.
Thanks for the call. And let's go to another Mary, 312-981-7200 on WGN. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. I was wondering, this is a breast cancer that's very rare and very aggressive. I lost my daughter in July to it after only a one-year battle. She was diagnosed with triple-negative HER factor inflammatory breast cancer. And I would like to see the doctors perhaps have more research or something done so that when women, she was only 45, and when women are diagnosed with this form of breast cancer, that there's more help for them.
First of all, why don't you explain inflammatory breast cancer? Because it is fairly rare, but it is...
It's very rare and very aggressive.
Very aggressive, as unfortunately you found out.
Yes.
Yes, unfortunately, inflammatory breast cancer is a very aggressive type. What it specifically refers to is the fact that breast cancer has progressed to a point where it has infiltrated the skin, meaning when you look at the breast, you can see skin changes, different types of lesions, or the skin is thickened, and which in most types of breast cancer, that's not the case. And when we see that, it tells us that the breast cancer has a good ability to spread, and it's possible that it already has spread. And for that reason, we treat them the most aggressively with every type of treatment. And usually that means chemotherapy first, and as well as looking, you know, the entire body to see if there's any evidence that it has spread.
Is there a way to find out ahead of time? Are there tests that can be done, or something? I assume it's not just regular self-exam with this, because it just sounds more invisible.
She found the lump herself and went immediately for her. Her scheduled mammogram was like a week later. They took her in immediately, and she found the lump, but of course it was also in her lymph nodes, and she did chemo. She did complete radical mastectomy. She did radiation, and then it traveled to her brain. She had 3 brain tumors after that.
Yeah, the way that we typically diagnose it is when I see someone in the office with skin changes that I might be thinking is inflammatory breast cancer, we'll actually do a biopsy of the skin itself, and that can tell us if
she had that done.
Right.
She had that done. My biggest thing is I would really like to see more research done for inflammatory breast cancer. There's a lot of research done and a lot done for the different stages, which is great. I've done the Avon Breast Cancer Walk for 10 years with her, and never thought I would lose her to breast cancer.
Yeah, it's tough, and when it goes so fast like that also, really, really difficult. I know that there are organizations that deal specifically with inflammatory breast cancer, where people can get a lot more information. I imagine that they have support groups. I know that perhaps the organization that we're going to meet in a couple of minutes after breast cancer diagnosis may be of some help to you, Mary, in dealing with everything that you're going through, not only emotionally what you're going through, but you know, trying to maybe guide you in directions to achieve the things that you want to do and to get the word out a little bit more about inflammatory breast cancer, which would be the greatest tribute to your daughter, wouldn't it? To
definitely
help somebody else learn that you know, so they can you know, find out that they have it. I'm so sorry for your loss, but I really appreciate that you called up and shared that with everybody today. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. It's 116 on WGN. Let's take a quick break. And we'll talk about the After Breast Cancer Diagnosis Organization that is new to Chicago, but has been around in other cities for quite some time. And they help people dealing with the shock of a diagnosis, dealing with treatment, and even occasionally people like Mary who are you know, dealing with the outcome that they don't want to deal with. And we'll get to that coming up next on WGN.
To get cancer, it just kind of, it like breaks a bubble and everything falls away. Nothing is the same. No, you can't get upset about little things anymore.
Now back to Breast Cancer 2013 on 720 WGN.
121, this is Dean Richards. Our 17th annual 3-hour town hall meeting on where we are in the fight against breast cancer. In 1996, when we did our first show, we had the head of the breast center of Highland Park Hospital, who was here with us, and also we had the executive director of the Why Me National Breast Cancer Organization on the program. And the two answered questions and did pretty much what we're doing here today with the information that was available then. And Why Me at the time was the go-to organization for information, for support, for everything related to breast cancer. Why Me National Breast Cancer Organization is no longer in existence, but filling the void that was left when Why Me folded is an organization that's been around for some time around the country, but new to the Chicago area.
And that's the ABCD Foundation that we learned about through our friends at Catch 35 Restaurant is running a promotion. They've been running a promotion all during the month of October in which they're giving 100% of the proceeds for all desserts that are being served at their two locations and also their sister restaurant to the ABCD organization, After Breast Cancer Diagnosis. Their executive director is Ginny Finn, who joins us in studio now. Welcome. Nice to have you here with
us. It's terrific to be here.
So tell us a little about the history of ABCD.
Well, this spring we will be celebrating our 15th anniversary, and we actually were founded, as was Why Me, by a breast cancer survivor. Her name was Melody Wilson, and Melody actually was the first female anchorwoman in the state of Wisconsin and was in the Milwaukee area. And she had quite a following, et cetera. And when she was diagnosed, she decided that this was going to be a teaching moment. She was a fairly private person, and this was before the world was pink. She decided that since she was going to probably be part of the story, she might as well use it to help people. And what happened is people started calling her at the station. She was a good Midwestern girl from northern Minnesota, and so she said, come on down between broadcasts. And she would talk to total strangers, and she was also at the same time in treatment, and she had a number of blessings. She always talked about her blessings, even though she was a breast cancer patient. She had a very supportive family, husband. She had access to health care, in fact, was able to get second opinions at some of the leading cancer centers in the country. And then she realized that no matter how much her family loved her and how much her medical team took care of her, that the real support that she felt was missing was that from peers. People had already been down this road. And actually, when she started ABCD, she actually reached out to Why Me and learned about some of the things that they did. But, of course, they did a full menu of things. Its cornerstone was its hotline, but they did a full menu. And she was really concerned about custom matching peer-to-peer and to making sure that those people who were doing the supporting were trained and supported at all times because they, too, are breast cancer survivors, and this isn't something one should do casually. So we've actually always worked more directly with the healthcare providers, and we're pretty much neophytes at raising our profile in a general way. So we're very grateful to be here with you this afternoon.
Well, I'm glad that you could be here because I think, as I learned about it from our friends at Catch 35, they were the ones that said, you need to know about this group. And the more that I read about it and learned about it, I just thought it was fantastic. Even though there are lots of places to go, it's great that there is one sort of central place with the kind of tentacles that you do into this subject. We all were sitting listening to our previous caller, Mary, and the pain that she was going through and talking about losing her daughter to inflammatory breast cancer and a call to ABCD might be very helpful for her, don't you think?
Certainly, and actually she's a perfect example of how what we do is not only what we do directly, but we collaborate with reliable, credible resources. In Mary's case, obviously, she's in a heartbreaking situation, having already lost her daughter, but she has an expressed concern regarding inflammatory breast cancer research, so we could certainly connect her more formally with those that are doing that type of work, as well as we do have inflammatory breast cancer folks who are living with the disease who are mentors, but really their role would have been with her or her daughter while her daughter was with us. And certainly if her healthcare team has not already provided her access, there are, of course, support services for those who are in a state of bereavement. And it's actually the kind of call we take often, and it was tough to listen to, actually.
Yeah.
My heart goes out to her.
Yeah, I hope she does follow up, it would be a lovely tribute to her daughter to follow up and to help other women. I mean, that's really the point, really, mm-hmm. isn't it, of what your organization and what so many others, are going through to spread the information so other women don't have to go through what Mary and many others have gone through. How do people get a hold of you? I mean, what's the best way to access this information?
Well, it depends on what is easy for them. I mean, the old-fashioned telephone works wonders, and that's 800-977-4121. And survivors are on that helpline and can transfer you to the office if you need it, Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time, and on Saturdays from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. And by the end of the year, it'll be a 24/7 service, which is a tribute to the legacy of Why Me, because, of course, they were the only ones who did that 24/7. And they could also simply go to our website, which is kind of long, actually. It's abcdbreastcancersupport.org. But right on the front page, they can just click Helpline, and it will either give them a phone number or they can send an email. We also have an app. And if they go to the website, they can download, you know, find out how to download the app. It's in the Apple Store and the Google Play Store. It's really what's easiest for them, and then we will go from there.
Okay, and we're going to put links to all of that up on our website. If it's easier for you, just to remember WGNradio.com. We'll have everybody's links here. What a concept, though, an actual telephone call.
I know.
Crazy.
Well, actually,
talk.
It is. And actually, even young ones tend to drift back to the phone at some point because there's nothing like the rapport in a human voice.
Yeah, I was going to say, with something like this, I think I would want to hear an actual voice rather than trying to type in my question and wait for a response. 128, we'll have much more and hear some amazing survivor stories when we come back. And get back to your phone calls, actual human voices at 312-981-7200, or you can text in comments and questions at 24720 on WGN.
You now have an empowered group of women who go in there and ask questions. And I actually have very high aspirations, in part because women are asking more challenging questions, that we're going to make big advances over the next decade, not just in how we treat breast cancer, but in better diagnosis of the problem.
Now back to Breast Cancer 2013 on 720 WGN.
With our guest, Dr. Mark Sisko from North Shore University Health System, Dr. Catherine Pesch, from North Shore, and also in studio with us, Ginny Finn, the Executive Director of After Breast Cancer Diagnosis, an organization that you can contact if you have questions about anything related to breast cancer. We'll meet our breast cancer survivors in a few minutes. Let's get a few more phone calls in here at 312-981-7200. And Diana, thank you for holding on. You are next on WGN.
Thank you so much, Dean, and thank you so much for having this on your program this afternoon. The reason I'm calling is that in January of this year, I was diagnosed with breast cancer after a routine mammogram. Actually, I had my routine mammogram. They sent me for an ultrasound, and then they did a biopsy, and then I was diagnosed. And the surgeon they had sent me to in the suburbs decided to do a PET scan. They called, interesting enough, he called me on the phone to tell me I had breast cancer, which I thought was wow. And then he had my husband and I come in for a consultation. We had our consultation. He told me it was, you know, a manageable size, lumpectomy, no problem. A week later, he calls me and says, you know what? It's larger than we thought. And we're going to need to take more, but it's okay. We're going to do a lumpectomy. And the things that were happening and that were being said to me, I was very, very uncomfortable with. So what I did was I started doing some research, and I called the University of Chicago and set up appointments with their incredible breast team there. And come to find out, I do have very dense breasts, always have. And come to find out that it was much larger than what they had found earlier. It was all in my ductwork in my left breast. And so I scheduled and had a mastectomy on my left breast with the DIEP procedure, which is amazing. And they did the receptor test afterwards to see if I would need the chemotherapy and the radiation. And thank God, it came back that no, I did not. The interesting part for me is that my insurance company is still fighting me since March over covering that test, which I think is amazing. But the reason I'm really calling is to encourage women to seek the treatment that fits right for them, and don't assume that what is being said to you is the right thing for you.
Well, that's a fantastic point. And, you know, that begs the question then, how, you know, you go into your doctor's office, you hear the C word, And often you just hear white noise after that. Even though the doctor is speaking, you don't hear anything that's being said. It's just a tsunami wave of information that you have no idea what they're talking about. How does a person sort their way through all of this, doctors?
Well, I think that that's a very common scenario. And I think one of the ways that cancer treatment has evolved, especially at institutions that treat a lot of cancer, is really developing integrated programs for dealing with breast cancer. So whereas 15 years ago, maybe you got a mammogram and then, you know, you had to make a bunch of phone calls to find a breast surgeon or a breast specialist, and then maybe you had to wait 3 or 4 weeks to get in to see this person. Now, at least at North Shore, and I think at a lot of the bigger institutions in Chicago, it's a lot more integrated, a lot more streamlined, and I think the messaging, we've gotten a lot better in terms of our messaging, in terms of making sure that everybody is on the same page. Part of this has been technology-driven in terms of medical records, in terms of me having access as a plastic surgeon to all of their oncologic data, you know, which informs my discussion with the patients. But I think, you know, getting a second opinion is never a bad thing. And I certainly encourage patients, and, even my own patients who are unsure if we're having a discussion and there isn't a clear answer. And I tend not to want to make decisions for my patients. I tend to want to kind of lay things out for them because I tend to take care of a lot of very well-educated, you know, patients who do their homework. But getting another opinion is never a bad thing. And so I certainly encourage that. And then finally, it's really important for you to find a doctor that you're comfortable with. You know, and I tell patients, there's a lot of plastic surgeons who do breast reconstruction in the city of Chicago, and I'm going to be spending a lot of time with you. You know, so if you don't like me as a person, hopefully this is going to be quality time that we're spending together. Right. But if you don't like me as a person, go ahead and find somebody else.
Well, that's really important Diana's point where she got a diagnosis on the telephone. That would have been the last time that I would have spoken to that doctor with something so groundbreaking. And all he thought it was a quick phone call to you. Yeah. Do you agree? Am I wrong about that?
No, not at all. It's a really difficult and delicate situation to be in. And I always try to make very clear with my patients after they undergo a biopsy how exactly I'm going to be contacting them. Do they prefer to come in and be contacted that way? Do they prefer me to, as soon as the results are available, to call them? To maybe call them and just say the results are back, I'd like you to come in? Do they want to hear it over the phone? And the fact of the matter is everyone is different. So I try my best to be clear in that way.
Be as personal as possible.
Yeah, exactly.
I know because I had a thyroid cancer scare several years ago, and the way that I found out was on the telephone from my doctor in the parking lot where you all parked your cars. Here today, I just got a telephone call on my way to work telling me that I had cancer. And, you know, that's just a little bit of a big deal when you're on your way to work to get something like that. That was the last day that I spoke to that doctor. Yeah. I was done with that.
Dean, if I could, I do have another question. The fact that I did have dense breast, I do have dense breast, still have one. And the fact that I had my regular mammogram, I, on at least two occasions, had to go back for ultrasounds, you know, and then they deemed it okay. Mm-hmm. And I did ask when I finally did have my surgery, did someone drop the ball, you know, in my life here? Because now I'm 62, you know, was something dropped? And the surgeon told me no, because what I had would not have shown up. It would only show up with the MRI.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, women with dense breasts, and when we come back we get a reading of something irregular with our mammogram, should we be forcing the issue to have an MRI as opposed to an ultrasound?
It's really a difficult question because everyone's breast density is so different. And, you know, my use of MRI is very selective in that, you know, it sounds like if I had a patient just like you and just something wasn't making sense, on a physical exam and with all the information that I had, I tend to then, I do get an MRI to really have as most information that I can. I do think it's difficult to make a blanket statement that all women with dense breasts should get an MRI. There's actually been multiple studies looking at that. MRIs have their downsides, many downsides, meaning that they find too many things that end up being nothing, which then creates a lot of anxiety for women. So it's part of the difficulty in getting MRIs in every woman. But to answer your question, really, it's a discussion that, you know, it really depends on the discussion that you have with your physician about whether or not you should be getting one.
I think that, Diana, though, that you need to be aggressive and not be afraid to ask questions and not be afraid to question what your doctor is saying to you. If you've heard something else, if somebody's told you something else, if you've read something else, don't be afraid to bring it up and have your doctor explain that either you are correct or you should ignore this.
Well, I became a bulldog after after my situation, and I felt truly a misdiagnosis, that, and after what I've learned, that I and people in my family, I'm very a huge advocate for them in what and trying to guide them on what can be done, because there's a lot of procedures. And I also found that the surgeon in the suburbs was going with a procedure he was comfortable doing. He didn't even lay out other procedures for me. So, you know, you need to do your homework. You really need to research. You need to talk to women who have gone through this and find the facility and the doctors that you're comfortable going to.
Yeah, you really do need to be a bulldog about it, because, I mean, how great that you are that aggressive with this. But think of somebody who is terrified. Think of somebody that doesn't have the kind of support system that you may have. Think of somebody who may not be as educated as you may have, or speak, you know, come from a different country and not be able to negotiate the language as well. And then there's so many factors where you just stand there and you do whatever doctor tells you. That may or may not be, you know, the best information. No offense to doctors, but I mean, you guys must know, right, that not all the information that people are getting is the best information, and that a lot of times a person does get the procedure because that's the procedure that the doctor likes to do and not necessarily the right one for that patient.
Absolutely. I mean, an educated patient certainly is going to do better in 2013 in the U.S., you know, with the caveats that, you know, we have more access today to information than ever in the history of humanity. And that works both ways, though, you know. So there's a lot of information out there on the internet that may or may not be accurate. There are a lot of stories on the internet that may reflect, you know, a disproportionate, you know, group of people. But certainly, you know, there are a lot of, you know, well-established websites, American Cancer Society, that have good information on them. And I think it is really important for patients, as with any disease process, to be their own advocates and to really do their homework.
Because not all websites are created equal, are they, with the kind of information that that they may be getting. So it's just so – that's why groups like ABCD, I think, are so great, that it helps you to sort through all of this. You must run through this all the time, of people running through this kind of scenario of getting bad information and they're confused and scared.
Quite often, and I perhaps would like to recruit the caller to talk, be one of our mentor trainees pretty soon. We're actually doing training in Chicago on the 16th of November, so
I actually have spoken to a couple of people through the University of Chicago. They called me and asked me to speak to the people who are apprehensive.
Excellent.
About going through procedures, and you know, and I told them I will never talk someone into a procedure, but I can only go by what I experienced and what worked for me, which I have to tell everyone, it's been a little over 6 months and I feel fabulous.
Well, there you go. Then that is actually an advertisement for the value of peer support, and peer support that's provided in the context and in partnership with the medical professionals. It really is one of those things that we're not giving medical advice, but as is referenced right. In as many stories you can tell, it really is about helping someone who might be overwhelmed with that word cancer. Okay, let's sit down and talk through the questions you really wanted to ask your doctor, but you didn't actually get a chance to, or you don't remember being answered because you were just so stressed. And one of them might be, how many times have you done this procedure, doctor, that you are recommending that I have? That's a pretty important question. And there's a litany of questions we'd be happy to share with you and any of your listeners.
That said, Diana, I want you to go to every doctor appointment I ever have with me from now on.
I will. I would be right there for you, Dean.
All right, I appreciate it.
Dean, again, thank you so much for doing this.
That's nice of you. Thank you. And thank you for calling and sharing and adding to it. 1:53 on 720 WGN. Dean Richards with our 17th annual breast cancer special, Breast Cancer 2013. Taking your calls, taking your texts this year at 24/7/20. In from the 630 area code, Dean, thank you for your cancer shows. I'm a 34-year-old married male who listens for the information that you have. And talking about doctors making a difference. From the 773 area code, someone writes, Dr. Sisko changed my life 1 year ago for the better. He was so kind and supportive. As an oncology nurse myself, I know the importance of not only great physicians, but physicians who care about you as a person. So a nice ringing endorsement for you there, doctor, from Kathy, who sent in a text. You talked a little bit earlier about new therapies, what's new on the horizons, new chemotherapies is something that I've read quite a bit about this year. What are the things about which you are both most excited about, new on the horizon, the latest, the greatest?
We have some great advances in terms of chemotherapy treatments, really even in the last 5 to 10 years. A very specific form of breast cancer that's called HER2 positive. There is a chemotherapy drug, which is called Herceptin, which has been extremely effective in reducing chance of cancer returning as well as overall survival. And really what all of this, the nitty gritty is that we're able to specifically target breast cancer in a much better way than we ever have before. And really that's where even future advancements are coming. There's other forms of Herceptin that are in development and also being used, as well as multiple clinical trials in the chemotherapy world that are quite exciting.
New trials that are going on that people can participate in.
Absolutely.
And be part of, right?
Mm-hmm. If a woman meets certain criteria, I work pretty much at the same office as my oncologists, and we work together. We all have the same patients. We share patients, and we will, if I have a woman in my office that I feel qualifies for a trial, I have them meet with the oncologist that day, and then they can then meet with a woman who's in charge of the trial and give them information about it to see if they're interested.
Yeah, Dr. Sisko, how about you? Latest and greatest in your field?
Well, I think there's been a lot of evolution in reconstructive plastic surgery. You know, as the goal in breast cancer for a lot of women has shifted from living through it, as the treatment of breast cancer has gotten better. You know, a lot more people are focusing on living well through it, and certainly reconstruction and is a big component of that for a lot of women. You know, there's a million different ways to rebuild the breast after various kinds of surgery. I think some of the more interesting things more recently are more minimally invasive ways of transplanting tissue from one part of the body. One of the ways that we rebuild a breast is take some skin and fat from an area where a woman might not want it, sometimes the lower abdomen. There are some other areas and ways to transplant that tissue and actually shape it and mold it into a new breast. And sort of the newer ways of doing that by creating less kind of collateral damage from where we take the tissue we're finding very useful. Also, you know, this idea of partial breast reconstruction, which has been done a lot in Europe, hasn't gotten as much traction here, but this idea that there's always a tipping point when a woman has a small cancer versus a large cancer in terms of determining who can just have a lumpectomy and have a reasonable outcome after part of the breast is removed versus, you know, if you have a cancer that takes up a third of your breast, you know, maybe you're better off having the mastectomy because what gets left behind after that operation may not look good. And so there are sort of newer ways that we're rearranging the tissue that's left behind, or sometimes filling that void with tissue from somewhere else, so that we can take some patients who might have needed a mastectomy and kind of push them back into the lumpectomy group. And then I think finally sort of the holy grail for reconstructive surgery is this idea of tissue engineering, this idea of, you know, people are talking about fat transplants and growing tissue in a petri dish or growing tissue from one cell that a patient donates. And I think, you know, ultimately the idea that you could take a breast off the shelf and plug it into a patient is not, we've got a long way to go before we get to that point. But ultimately that, you know, that would be the gold standard. Although yeah. It's certainly possible that we find better ways to treat breast cancer, you know, than cutting the breast off by the time we get to that point that
right.
we can reconstruct them
right.
in that way.
Really, really fascinating. All the newest things are always so fascinating. The heart of this show has always been the inspiring survivor stories. And we will meet our survivors on this year's show when we come back after a check of news on WGN.